Accession number 13717, Colonel Lieutenant Colonel Charles G. Reel 2.
Lieutenant Colonel G, Reel 2. Now, we were talking about you'd gone home from your course with the 4th Battalion, Officer Cadet Battalion, and you said that you felt that you had a lot to learn, that you didn't know anything.
Particularly when I got to Boulogne, or near Boulogne, next door to it, where there was a week's training there before you joined your regiment.
So, you went home on leave. How much leave did you get?
I don't know, about a week, I suppose.
And then
we didn't go straight to France. We went to some training battalion at Kettering.
Do you know what it was called?
No, I don't. London Legendary of some kind. But it was not good.
What was wrong with it?
It was quite big. We paraded the first morning. And after a minute parade, as it dismissed to your duties, well, we hadn't any. Everybody fled, and there was the new people left, and they just put on something, oh, well, we'll get a sergeant to take you, something useless. And after a day or two, we used to go off to our huts instead of having the sergeant. We did fire on the range.
That was the first time we'd actually fired?
Yes.
How did you do it?
I think he did it twice. Any case, we all got reported by the musketry officer, and we all reported him, so it was cancelled out because he wasn't up one day. And so the various reports against us into the colonel.
What sort of reports?
Well, that he wasn't ready, and that he said we were inefficient or something. But they cancelled out because we had orders to go to France. We were given various injections before going to France, and the same day as the injections, I was allowed home. And there was snow on the ground. I nearly passed out in the snow walking from the end of the tram, not Sunderland. The trams had stopped, I think, when I got there, and I had to walk about 4 miles. I remember if you sat down in the snow, you wouldn't get up again. And so I struggled home, woke my father by throwing stones at the window and got in, and we had a few days leave before going to France. A very exciting feeling about going to France. But when we got...
Had you heard about the casualties on the Somme and everything else?
Yes, I'd heard letters from my brother about it.
I mean, did you realise how bad it could be?
Yes, my brother was in 3 attacks on the Somme. 3 times he was one of three officers unwounded, and noted for bearing a charmed life. And he wrote lurid letters. I've got them somewhere, but I can't find them all. My children may have got them, but they are about, and some lurid pictures of the Somme,
or that existed.
No, not pictures of the Somme. But letters, oh yes, I knew where they nearly drove my poor ailing mother off a rocker, these letters. I mean, one oughtn't to write them. And getting to Boulogne, we then went to that...
Do you remember the crossing at all?
No. A lot of crossings.
So you got to Boulogne?
I knew quite a lot of the officers going, you see, and quite friendly. We had to do a week at, I think it was Etop, as you probably know. An absolutely grim course, after what it had been in England, to revive knowledge. Bad at fighting course and this and that. Absolute murder.
Had you done much, I mean, you hadn't done much bayonet fighting or anything, had you? Had you done any bayonet fighting training before?
No.
So to you it was all new?
It was new. A lot of it was new. It was for sergeants and people coming back from leave or being wounded or something. And my uncle, who had been with, realized that I wouldn't know where he went, tried to get me an extra week there, but he failed. And after a week...
What else do you remember of the course?
Well, it really broke people's heart. It was terrible.
In what way, then?
Physique, I think. Very strict, and I was so tired. And then I had to go alone up in a train to a sort of details camp, the 9th Battalion, where, as I afterwards learned up, the Arras, and a few officers of the 9th, and some sort of detail thing. But on the way up in the train, some officers returning from leave said, "Where is that going?" And I said, "Nancy, sure, well, you've got hell in front of you." When I was going on leave, I shared a carriage with two officers who had been dismissed by Bradford after a few days, being incompetent or unfit to be officers. And they told me a bit about him, very fearsome.
You've not heard of him before?
No, I'd never heard of it before.
What sort of things did they say? Do you remember now?
Well, I mixed up as to whether they said it or the detailed camp. The detailed camp would know, because of particularly my hair was very long. I don't know, I suppose it's my fault. But they said you'd have to have your hair clipped all over. I did before I saw Bradford, but I was very anxious about it. I couldn't do it in the detailed camp. And... I was generally frightened.
So he had a reputation as a martinet?
Oh, yes.
Was there anything else they said about Bradford as your...
Well, they said that he'd recently been ordered to do an attack near Cherisi, and it said that it's impossible to do that attack until the village of Gombap is taken. You'll just have 400 casualties and get nowhere. And... they put it up to division or corps or something and gave him another order. He still refused to do it. So they handed it over to the 6th. And the 6th duty had their 400 casualties and got nowhere. Then they took his advice and took the map. And then they gave him the same job to do as they'd given before, attacking to the right of the map, or east of it, I suppose. And I joined the battalion on the day before that attack.
Now you're not quite sure what that date was?
No, I'm not, but I ought to be able to work it out. A bit of more care in the Bradford book, I could, I think. And it was a great success.
Yeah, we'll come on to that. But you'd heard that was what you were talking about on the way up.
Yes, and he'd refused to do the attack. They were a bit frightened of him because he'd done... After getting the VC on the Somme for the sort of generalship, he'd been the only battalion that had ever taken the Bap de Wallencourt. And I was told this, that he had sent 6 messages, I don't believe this, literally, 6 messages and got a receipt of things asking for reinforcements. And the brigadier said he'd never had a message. So there's obviously something wrong there. An exaggeration, but it is a fact that he did hold the butt for 18 hours, except for one dugout down below, and did ask for reinforcements and got none. They may have been killed on the route, because it was very dangerous. But
so that's what you heard about.
I got that sort of impression of him, and there'd be blue murder for any officer arrived with long hair that I had.
How long was it?
Well, it was very long. Much longer than it is now, because it's plastered down. But it was long and not curly, but just wild. And so I never had long hair normally.
Where did you arrive at?
I don't know exactly.
But on the Arras?
We moved. On the Arras front. I suppose I was in the same place. I spent one night there, and the next night I had to go up with the rations.
Now, you joined the rear echelons of the battalion. Who did you meet of the ninth?
I think one or two officers left out of the attack. Probably Duds.
What were your first impressions of what you met at the ninth?
Not impressed by them at all. Why I was a bit impressed when I got to the battalion itself, because it seemed highly keyed up and ready for anything.
So these presumably dud officers, what struck you about them? What struck you as dud about them?
I don't know. They didn't seem to have much in any way. An awful lot of the officers, I'm afraid, were the same right to the end of the war.
What do you mean? What was wrong with them?
I don't know. Keenness for war, I think. I think it got wiped out in the Battle of the Somme.
So they weren't keen?
Yes, they didn't really be keen or very efficient. And, of course, officers.
Did you meet anybody else before you went up with the rations? Did you meet anybody else there?
No.
So, next day you went up with the rations?
And the next day, I suppose I met somebody, I don't remember. Next day, I went up with my servant to the rations, and the headquarters, well, I never exactly saw it. We stopped somewhere near it, and somewhere at the adjutant and told me we'd spend the night in the trench. And we dug a hole in the side of the trench, and my servant and I huddled in it overnight, and they didn't bring us any breakfast. And the adjutant appeared after a bit and said, you ought to go up to the front line in a few minutes or something. You ought to carry water up, which we didn't do, and I said, how do we know where to go? I was in the trench, I'll show you. There was a gun there, and a sort of gun emplacement. They'd got headquarters and so on. I never saw the colonel. Took us to see to get out of the trench here. You'll find a light railway. Follow the right light railway till you get the front line. And so we got out, and I was a bit scared. What's the front line look like? No at all. No idea. Nice sunny morning. We walked along a bit, and after a bit we met some people coming out who crawled towards us and said, oh, so you better crawl here because there's a sniper. Got this little bit of it, so we did, and we got up and walked. And I was really a bit sort of scared as to what's going to stop us walking. We went on, eventually found not a trench, but a hole in the ground about as big as this room, with an officer lying in a wounded officer, more about him later, lying there, said he was not going to a hospital. And a sergeant major who was talked a lot of rot about the war, and gave me some tea in a mess can, or whatever they called, that it had stew in it. And tea had no milk in it, and it was pretty grim drink. But at the beginning of life, this bloke told me about the war all day and how many Germans he'd shot and get revenge for his brother's death, etc. He was a fairly efficient bloke, but they were very overjoyed with their attack, which had captured quite a lot of prisoners and two or three guns.
This is the attack on Cherisi, the successful attack.
Yes. Not on Cherisi, but in the direction of Cherisi.
Gotcha.
The attack on Cherisi is a thing done in September.
That's the raid.
So yes, the raid.
It was in the direction of Cherisi.
Yes, in the direction.
So Cherisi, this is part of the Arras offensive.
Yes. And the map on our left, and I remember coming out of the line. I can't remember how long I was in it, a day or two, I think.
Did anything happen while you were up there?
No,
were you
nothing. No enemy seen, no shells, I think, and came out. And then the battalion next thing I remember is a battalion going back to rest, i.e. work hard, train. And I was allotted to B Company, was a relatively senior officer, captain. I mean, a bit more age and one or two young people.
Do you remember his name, the captain?
No, I can't remember. I could find his name. No, I couldn't. But they went. Very impressive. The young, not very impressive in any way. And we lived in a room. And
now, whereabouts,
the next day,
whereabouts were you when you were at rest?
Well, one of the villages just behind one called Cherisi. There were so many over the next 6 months, you see, we kept moving to the port or reserve or back into the line. The next day I made orderly officer and had to mount guard. I'd never heard of a guard or mounting guard. I suppose I'd heard there was a guard outside back in your palace. And I said, what do I do? And they said, oh, well, you better go and see the Sergeant Major and ask him. So I went to him and he said what time he'd be doing the guard and would tell me what happened. And I duly watched, and guard mounting, the colonel was there, and a lot of people watching. And I got it right. It's the only time I've ever got right, in fact. So I made a bit of an impression on Bradford by then, I suppose, of getting it right. But it was typical of him that he didn't come out or do anything when I went up to the line, as he never did with new officers, always kept them waiting quite a time because they were probably spoilt with life in England and they'd got to realise that life was tough out here. And he did it on purpose. But then I remember drilling and so on. We were very busy because we were hoping then to be quartered if the Allied offensive broke through. And so we were very hard worked. We rose at, well, a book on Bradford tells you at 7:15 or something, trading paraded at 7:15 to avoid the heat of the day and so on. But we had to march quite a way to our trading area and we worked very hard indeed.
What sort of things were you doing?
Well, I remember Bradford coming with me, coming, we were drilling and doing PT, and he stood with the officer doing it for 5 or 10 minutes, criticised him or the men, or perhaps talked to the men. But he came to me, and I had spotted from listening the sort of things he was saying to the others and tried to get them sent to the men before he did. And they weren't really good at drill, but that was fair, and I didn't know my drills in the ordinary way, so I wasn't worried. And about the next thing concerning Bradford was we were having these stripping for an hour each day, and of course they had to march somewhere out of the camp and or village, or probably in a village, yes, living in a village. The men in prepared bunks in barns in the village, and the officers, or the five of us in a biggish room like this, and some of the senior officers in beds. And we officers had to write an essay on attack, and I duly wrote a fairly impressive one, I hoped. And then I got an order one day to go up to headquarters and be adjutant somewhere in May.
So that's when you were very junior. I mean,
Very junior. I knew nothing about it. Oh, I had two rides on a horse, I believe, before, some company horse or something or other. I was taken for a ride, but I hadn't ridden in my life at all before. And I had to have my own horse, of course, as head, and my own groom on the horse duly came out. And I had to, it was a rite march that day, and I had to sit on a horse, pretend I knew something about it. And everything went all right, except that somewhere on the way, somebody fired a rifle, I can't remember how, but the horse took a few jumps sideways, it scared me a bit, but all was well.
And what were your duties as adjutant?
Well, really, I had to change my handwriting. That's one of the things that happened. I knew nothing whatever about the office. The second in command knew I knew nothing about it, and he'd been ordinary sergeant earlier in the war, and all the files and things were his doing, and he really put it a shame that somebody who knew nothing about them should be in charge, but the sergeants in the orderly room were terribly efficient. And in the 2 years I was there, rows of them got commissioned, and new ones came in and picked it up, highly intelligent people, and they were all terribly nice. And perhaps it made me change my writing. People said, your writing may be very beautiful, but it isn't natural. It must be like Corporal so-and-so. Eventually, after a month or so, he said, did you or Corporal so-and-so write this? I said, I wrote it. I didn't get any, but that's the compliment. It was all right. But I spent hours of the day standing to attention, watching him, dealing with this, that, and the others. And sometimes, very often, he'd say, there's an order, lose it. I'd look at it and lose it.
What sort of things would he do that to?
Oh, he did it an awful lot.
But what sort of order would he want you to lose?
I can't remember, but anything futile he just ignored. And he was strong enough with his VCs, and VC and MC, and to get away with a lot. Well, one that went on for 2 years was, we used to steal a tent every time we moved from a camp. We had 26 tents at the end of the war, all new. When we had to march into Germany at the end of the war, we debated whether we could keep our extra horses and things. We decided that in the winter we wouldn't be able to. And then they said, hand in surplus stores at divisional headquarters, such and such a street in Moberg, and we handed in 23 vehicles, all full, all loaded, all with horses and mules, with proper harness, everything. Tied them all together, and the sergeant went in and said, 9th Dunlight Infantry, surplus stores in the street, and fled as hard as he could. I don't know what they did. But so it was worth a fortune.
Who started that tradition? I mean, was that Bradford's idea? To
I think so. Before I joined, the New Zealanders came to France after Gallipoli, and everything new. One night, we pinched all their horses and put all our dirty ones instead. We had to give them back, of course. But we kept one. It was hidden and gagged in a tent, and that became the colonel's second charger, which he gave him when he left. The second command wouldn't let me have it, it's because I couldn't ride.
So the idea was to get what you could?
Oh, yes. And you see, the tent was absolutely essential, because the ordinary room stuff was considerable. I mean, we'd four people in the ordinary room, and we had to get out orders every day.
So who exactly made up the orderly room office under you as adjutant?
Who made up the orderly room?
Yes, what were the personnel in the office?
As far as I remember, when I went in, there were two sergeants and a corporal and a learner. When he probably had to learn writing like me, you see, and picked by the sergeants probably. And a lot got commissioned later.
And what was the function of the office? How did the office work?
Well, it had to put in a terribly complicated report on form called with a mystic number. Everybody, and I never understood it or attempted to. The men did it for me, but the previous adjutant had done it, I think. And we did on Friday, and otherwise keeping record of everything, mainly getting the colonel to write orders for the next day or dictate them. Then they had to be copied somehow for the companies as some sort of copying machine. I think it's a little later we got a typewriter, but there was quite a lot of files and all sorts of information about all the men that were in the battalion or had been in it.
So you had to keep a track of everyone in the battalion.
But without a tent, it all get wet and rain. You see, so we had an excuse for stealing a tent or two. And so it grew, 26 in the end. And eventually we had to sign a document that we hadn't any. The colonel said he'd sign it, so I signed it for him. And, you know, I absolutely quit that way.
Now, so the office would work like you keep the files on every man and where they were.
Yes.
You'd do the weekly or daily returns, I presume.
I don't know.
What about the orders? You do Bradford's orders for him, or get him to do them.
There was a book of standing orders, because I had to fake it later, get out of a jam. He had his own standing orders.
He
did an enormous amount himself.
What were the standing orders? Could you tell me about that? And what were roles?
I can't remember. I know that what I imitated was at the March attack in 1918, the colonel was on leave and I was on leave and the quartermaster was on leave. Well, that was a Bosch, that we were all on leave at once. But I was the first of those, otherwise I wouldn't have gone, I don't think. But the colonel had been told that the attack was not going to happen until April. And that's in the book.
We'll come back to that then. So that was the sort of thing that would be in standing orders, that you shouldn't all be away at once.
We lost 16 revolvers. We got 16 new revolvers and they were lost. And not been issued. They wanted us to pay for them. We had no fund which could pay for them. And so I invented, rubbed out an order, and the Bradford said the orders invented, a revolver is a dangerous weapon, and a revolver will not be issued to men unless they are properly trained in its use. Which covered the thing completely, shut up a quarrel that held on for weeks. But it was hidden in Bradford's orders. With all sorts of things, like every man must go out on patrol, not every night, but everybody got to be used to no man's land. And if possible, don't use communication trenches. If you know your way and it's safe, use the top. We always walked out on the top if we could. I can't remember all sorts of things about training. He was an expert on it, and as I afterwards learned, or he told me, various little pamphlets or things used to come round the whole army, and he wrote them all, or practically all. He almost tried to design some method of getting infantry across wire or across the few hundred yards of the German trenches so they wouldn't all get shot by a machine gun. I thought of thinking of a sort of cover that you could carry with you. In the single file, all sorts of designs he got. He's always working on things of that nature.
The part one and part two orders, you do them every day.
Yes. And I can't remember what it's all about, but the people were all busy. I mean, about 17 hours a day, because I was doing a lot of the time standing at attention, watching the colonel and see what he was writing, and what big things for me to do. And
what sort of things would he pass to you to do?
I can't remember. It seems a lot, but there'd be 600 men to look after, a number of officers, and lots of files about.
What would you say the job of an adjutant was then? What was your job?
Actually, personal assistant to the colonel. And he liked young people. He was young. When we were in the trenches, the old second man left behind, the average age of people at headquarters was 20. It's unbelievable, but it's true. There were three of us 19, one of 20, Colonel 24.
Now, why do you think he picked you? Because you'd only, you'd arrived, you'd joined B Company, I think it was.
I don't know why he picked me. The man, the person that I knew of as adjutant of one of the staff later, had in some earlier scraps, earlier in April, I think, with various bits of scraps, he had collected some armed men and rushed on German post, which I think he got the MC, but he got wounded, and he never came back to us. The person I knew was the adjutant. And so I was sort of acting adjutant until he got a staff job, I think.
So what had happened to you is you joined the battalion, spent one day in the front line, sort of thing.
Yes.
And then come back.
In the company, I did a week or two in the company, writing an essay and being watched parading
and
by Bradford and training.
But then you've been put straight into the office without any other active service.
Yes, I knew nothing about anything in the office. And I had to learn. I never learned.